To dare to be aware of the facts of the universe in which we are existing calls for courage. That's Wilfred Bion. And he also mentions and places great emphasis on what he calls negative capability. To paraphrase him, the capacity to be in uncertainty, doubt and confusion without an irritable reaching after certainty. And I find his thinking a very fruitful position in which to situate myself in the clinic. Bion and Lisa has spoken also about some of these ideas, and I think they'll speak to each other. He was particularly interested in the extraordinary protections individuals may resort to in order to avoid, evade, or postpone the experience of psychic pain. Realize I didn't check my time. These strategies, while they may be necessary to protect the psyche from catastrophic and overwhelming anxiety and psychic collapse, can extract a high toll, constricting and impoverishing the ego and curtailing the capacity to learn from experience, and having a deadening effect on psychic life. For Bion, then, the focus of the psychoanalytic process was not so much about the resolution of conflict, but about increasing the patient's capacity to bear psychic pain. Admittedly, not a huge selling point to a prospective patient who may come with the hope and the fantasy of becoming more efficient at avoiding or getting rid of painful experience. Bion also held the view, of course, that if we cannot suffer pain, we cannot suffer pleasure. Lisa referred to what Bion named beta elements, the kind of unmetabolized experience, perhaps undigested facts, sense impressions, or sensations, which, unless transformed into what he called alpha elements, a transformation that makes them available for emotional experience and for thinking or dreaming, they're only otherwise fit for evacuation, either into the body as psychosomatic symptoms or attempt into the other, if you like, through projective identification or being expelled through acting out or psychosis. Some experiences in just talking in the prison service made me very aware that it seemed to me, anyway, that very many of the young men in particular I encountered in prison seem to really suffer from that lack of having had access to an alpha function, if you like, so that capacity to transform their experience. So they relied so heavily on expelling painful experience, and they often had a great deal of very painful experience to expel through acting out. And of course, in the extremes of psychosomatic presentations or psychosomatic strategies, we can encounter people who seem not to have either contact with or a language for emotional experience. So in this capacity to transform proto-experience, let's say, is not yet developed in the infant who relies on the maternal function of attentiveness, receptiveness, and capacity for reverie, for tuning into the infant and taking in the infant's experience, making it meaningful. And this repeated experience can allow the infant, in turn, as Lisa described, to gradually internalize that capacity to digest and transform experience. Now, the analytic encounter, too, may offer an opportunity to retrieve previously intolerable, unbearable, or inaccessible proto-experiences for transformation. But the psychoanalytic encounter itself, of course, is a site of turbulence. And as Bion said, when two people meet, an emotional storm is created. And the encounter, of course, also with previously disavowed or evaded aspects of the self may bring with it the threat of madness, the fear of breakdown. Freud contends that the physician cannot spare his patient this phase of treatment. He must get him, says Freud, to re-experience some portions of his forgotten life. From the perspective of Bion's thinking, I would rephrase or maybe add that she must get him to experience for the first time some portions of his unlived and unexperienced life. The aspect of the adversarial in the encounter, which is also mentioned, and the potential for shock in the encounter came very powerfully to me in an experience where I named something for a patient who had dealt with what they considered the kind of unspeakable, intolerable, unacceptable in their erotic life by leading, to some extent, absolutely parallel lives, which were not to come into contact with each other. And in naming something for the patient at a moment when himself was not in contact with that aspect, the reaction was one of such shock and a kind of collapse that my experience was that I had lost my mind, that I had actually spoken to this person about someone else, that I had made a mistake, that I had sort of introduced a different person's experience into the exchange. And it was that kind of experience, well, I suppose to quote Bion again, certainly at that moment, there really were two terrified people in the room. In thinking more about the terms we're exploring today and with the language of Bion, I was somehow, I didn't understand why, drawn back to read T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets, which I had not read actually since I was really quite young, but they had been extremely important to me at that time. And I was very struck by how much Eliot appeared to be expressing very related ideas poetically as distinct from theoretically. And hence I will be invoking him, I hope, not too enthusiastically for you, but he said, with regard to the kind of event I was just describing, we had the experience but missed the meaning. An approach to the meaning restores the experience in a different form. While the relationship between patient and analyst is the site of often the restoration and transformation that I'm talking about, it also relies on the mutual creative endeavor to forge a language that's fit to represent the experience. And Olga talked about, you know, the need for a new vocabulary. And I think we've been touching a lot today in different ways on the capacity for language to open up experience, but also, of course, to close it down and foreclose it. And the resultant possibilities of either aliveness or deadness in an encounter. And Bion struggled hugely with the limits of language, the tendency for language to become saturated and no longer be able to contain or convey meaning, and hence his attempts always to find fresh terms for his concepts. Eliot said that too, words strain, crack, and sometimes break under the burden, under the tension. Slip, slide, perish, will not stay still. And he even captures something of the endeavor of the clinician to keep language alive and fresh. Trying to use words, and every attempt is a wholly new start and a different kind of failure, because one has only learned to get the better of words for the thing one no longer has to say. or the way one is no longer disposed to say it. And so each venture is a new beginning, a raid on the inarticulate. My own venture into the territory of visual art, both as art maker and audience, offers me also an opportunity to explore another kind of encounter outside language, with its own capacity to disturb, disrupt, decenter, as well as to surprise, illuminate, and restore. When I discovered Carla's work some years ago, I was powerfully drawn to this quality of encounter, because there's a paradox that while we learn from experience and develop a capacity to represent and symbolize our experience through language, the considerable gains, and they are considerable, are inevitably accompanied by some quantum of loss. When we recognize the object or experience too quickly, identify it too glibly, categorize and classify it, we inevitably reduce and diminish the encounter. We can never repeat the intensity of our first experiences. That's why we may envy someone who has yet to see a particular sight, read a particular book, or fall in love for the first time. Eliot again. There is, at best, only a limited value in the knowledge derived from experience. The knowledge imposes a pattern and falsifies, for the pattern is new in every moment, and every moment is a new and shocking valuation of all that we have been. And I'm going to finish with Beckett. Let Beckett have the last word. To find a form that accommodates the mess, that is the task of the artist now. And in the light of our discussions today, perhaps that might also be a decent description of the task of the clinician. That's it.